Good morning. Today's daf from Menachos Lamed Hey. We're on Lamed Dalet Amud Beis. We're discussing Tefillin. Tefillin comes up. We started the discussion yesterday's Gemara vis-a-vis the Mishnah. The Mishnah informed us that every oath, every letter in the Tefillin that you're writing is essential. The Gemara asked the question, the same question that we asked regarding mezuzahs. That's obvious. It's part and parcel of the Torah. So of course, every letter is going to be significant. The Gemara talks about the Kotzel Shel Yud. Every nook and cranny, every corner of every letter, the halacha of Gvil Mokov, that the fact that every letter has to be surrounded by a margin, or in the very least, no letter could be touching one another. The Gemara on the top of Lamed Aleph Beis, which we started with yesterday, talked about the numbers of batim, the number of housings there are for tefillin. So we're all familiar with what a pair of tefillin look like. If you look at the tefillin shel Rosh, the tefillin shel Rosh is really a composite of four different houses. Right, each house is called a bias. Together, collectively, they're called batim. So the tefillin shel Rosh is a composite of four batim. It's made up of one piece of leather, but then it is folded over so that the four houses are going to be housing the four parshios. The four parshios themselves, as we learned in yesterday's daf, really should be four separate parshios. The Gemara entertained the idea yesterday that it could have one long parsha, as long as there's enough space between each parsha. So I take the parsha, fold it into its proper bias, and then unfold the empty spot, have the next parsha go in, and the Gemara entertained the idea that would be okay as well. The word totafos is an unusual word. The Gemara entertained the idea yesterday that it could be a composite of two words, both meaning two, just in different languages, which obviously is extraordinarily interesting, the idea that the Torah speaks in other languages as well. If you want a really interesting tosafos, I'm not going to go through it now, regarding also the language of totafos, the word of totafos, and some of the other meanings, layers of meaning that one can understand from the word totafos. That's the second tosafos on the amud. Tana Rabbanan, we're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. It's halfway down, a little bit less than halfway down, Lamed Aleph Beis, and the Gemara now quotes the Braisa. Ketzad kosen tefillin shel yad, kosval or, so as far as the writing of the tefillin shel yad is concerned. The tefillin shel yad, just a quick background. So that's one bias. It's one house, and all four parshios are written in. By the way, we're going to be discussing this later this morning, but we talk about the four parshios. There are four parshios in the Torah where tefillin are actually mentioned. Twice in Parshas Bo, and once in Parshas Vezchanan, and a fourth time in Parshas Akev. So those four parshios are the parshios that are written into the tefillin. On the Shel Rosh, they are compartmentalized into four separate batim, and on the Shel Yad, they're placed into one bias. Kaita Kosan Tilon Shel Yad.
Write one of them for the Shel Yad?
Huh? They're written on one cloth.
Oh, they're written on one cloth, yeah. You cannot read them four. Can you write
them in? Well, we're actually going to see. So, Ketzad Kosan Tilon Shel Yad, Kosva Al Or Echad. So, the Brice over here talks about that it has to be written on one parchment. Vim Kosva Ba'arba Oros Vinicha Ba'bais Echad Yatsa. Now, if you write them on four separate parshas and you put them in the one house of the Tilon Shel Yad, so Bidyevit, that would be fine. Vitzarech Ledavek. However, what you do have to do is you have to create cohesion between the parshas, glue or stitch them together. So just like externally it's one bias, so too internally it should be made up of one cloth. So either principally should be of one parchment, or b'di'evid, multiple parchments but stitched together. Rav Yossi Omer Ein Tzarech. Rav Yossi says we don't need to say this. I'm Rav Yossi Omode Li Reb Yehuda B'Rebi. Now Rav Yossi reports that Reb Yehuda admitted to him, so let's say you don't have a tefillin shel yad, but you do have old tefillin shel rosh, tola or al achas mehem uminicha. So what you could do is you could put a hide on top of it and place it. So moda hainu plutai, the Gemara says, what do you mean admit? Aren't they debating? Amarava midvar shel Rav Yossi chazer bar Rav Yehuda. No, Rav Yossi is of the opinion that Rav Yehuda, although originally was of the position that they don't have to be made up of one, but eventually conceded to his position. Ini, the Gemara says, is this true? Vashalach le'Rav Chanani mishmed Rav Yochanan tefil shel yad osin oso shel rosh v'shel rosh ein osin oso shel yad lefi shein moridim k'dusha chamor l'k'dusha kala. Now the Gemara talks about taking an old pair of tefillin shel rosh and recycling them as a tefillin shel yad. And meanwhile, the brisa we just quoted, it's not a brisa, but rather the memra that we just quoted tells us very clearly that I can take Tefillin Shel Yad and upgrade them to Tefillin Shel Rosh, but I cannot take the Shel Rosh and downgrade it to a Tefillin Shel Yad. The obvious question, why is the Tefillin Shel Rosh have more Kedusha? Tefillin Shel Rosh Chamur Kedusha, so Rashi over here writes, I'm reading the Rashi. Rashi is the last narrow line of the page. Tefillin Shel Rosh Chamur Kedusha, so Sherubo Shel Shakai Nase B'Shel Rosh. So Rashi over here notes, and we're going to point this out a number of times this morning, that the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, specifically Shin, Dalet, and Yud, are in the Tefillin. The Shin and the Dalet are in the Tefillin Shel Rosh. The Shin, most obviously. On the side of the Tefillin, the letter Shin is written. There's a three-letter Shin and a four-letter Shin written on the two sides of the Tefillin. We'll talk more about that later this morning. The Dalet, on the back of the Tefillin, where the knot is placed, the knot is in the form of a dalet. Some have the custom of having a single dalet, some have the custom of having a double dalet. But it's a dalet on the back. So shin and dalet on the shel rosh, and the yud is found on the knot by the tefillin shel yad. So that's the shin, dalet, and yud that make up HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. And Rashi over here interestingly writes that because the majority of the three letters, meaning two of the three, are on the shel rosh, therefore it has more kedusha. Aval b'shal zroa ein ela yud. Shiyei sham ritzu ketana kishir rachav etzba v'sof rosho ma'ad kimin yud. So that is one explanation, says Rashi, in terms of why the Tefillin Shel Rosh has more kedusha than the Tefillin Shel Yad. It's a numbers game. Rashi then continues to point out, v'od ksivaru kol amei. V'tani Rav Lazar agadol omer elo Tefillin Shel Rosh. A gemara we're going to be looking at later this morning also speaks out another idea, that the tefillin are going to be seen. Which tefillin are to be seen? And that, of course, is the tefillin shel rosh. Tefillin shel yad are to be covered, and the tefillin shel rosh are to be seen. And so, again, another indicator that the tefillin shel rosh has more kedusha. Pointed out to me, when you go through the halachas of the Rambam on tefillin, so the Rambam will always place the shel rosh before the shel yad, meaning when mentioning it at any given point in time, he'll mention the tefillin shel rosh, only followed by the tefillin shel yad. We're going to learn tomorrow's daf that obviously you put on the Shel Yad before the Shel Rosh, because that's the order in the Torah. Meaning the Torah first mentions the Tefillin Shel Yad and only afterwards mentions the Tefillin Shel Rosh, but that's only vis-a-vis placement. But in terms of Kedusha, Shel Rosh has more Kedusha than the Tefillin Shel Yad. So anyway, so what comes out over here is that you cannot take a Tefillin Shel Rosh and downgrade it to a Tefillin Shel Yad. The Gemara says, Lokasha haba atikasa habechadata. So the Gemara gives a simple resolution, not so simple, but simple enough that, well, if the Tefillin Shel Rosh had been used as the Tefillin Shel Rosh at that point in time, now it has the status of Tefillin Shel Rosh, and therefore you're right. You cannot downgrade it to Tefillin Shel Yad. If, however, when you wrote it for Tefillin Shel Rosh, but it hasn't been used yet, so then you can, if necessary, if needed, you can bring it down to a Tefillin Shel Yad. Uleman damar azman milsihi. So the Gemara says, now, what about the idea of reservations? Meaning, if I reserved it for the Tefillin Shel Rosh, if I earmarked it for the Tefillin Shel Rosh, so even if I haven't used it yet for the Tefillin Shel Rosh, so there is an opinion throughout Shas about Hazmana, that if a person reserves something for a particular item, for a particular usage, it gains that status immediately, even before usage. So the Gemara says, Da'asni alayim meikara. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. Meaning, if I do subscribe to the idea of Hazmana, so we can get around that very simply by just simply saying that, look, as the sofer is writing the tefillin, he can make it tonight and say, I'm writing this for Shel Rosh, but I reserve the right also to use it for Shel Yad. Now, before the actual usage, so now with the tonight, so you could use it either way. After usage, however, seemingly, that's it. Meaning, once you used it for the Shel Rosh, then you can no longer downgrade it to the Shel Yad. Tanur Rabbanan. Here we get to perhaps one of the most famous Gemaras and debates that revolve around tefillin, and that is the order of the parshios. As we already pointed out, there are four parshios in the tefillin. Two in Shmos, in the 13th parak of Shmos, and then a third in Veschanan, and a third in Akev. Now, the Veschanan and Akev, we're all familiar with those, because that is both the parsha of Shema, that's in Veschanan, and Vayam Shemoa, that's in Akev. A little bit less familiar, it is my bar mitzvah parsha, but a little less familiar with the two parshios found in Parshas Bo, but how exactly are these four parshios ordered in the tefillin? So we have a Gemara. Ketzat Sidran, Kadesh Li V'Hayaki V'Yacha Miyamin. So now we're looking from right to left. Now, I'm going to give away some of the Gemara coming up. When we say we're looking right to left, who's looking at what? Everything over here is perspective, right? So if Todd is wearing tefillin and I'm looking at him, so obviously the order for him of the parshios are going to be the exact opposite as when I'm looking at him. Meaning if I say right to left, so who's right? Who's left? So again, what's going to become very clear from the Gemara is that we're looking at it from, in other words, if he's wearing the tefillin, from my perspective. So in other words, and if I could, I mean, I understand they're rolled up and they're in a bias that's, you know, thick leather, so I can't read it. But in the event that I could read it, so I'd be reading it like a Torah, from right to left, in the same chronology. Now I'm giving away Rashi's opinion, but right now that's fine. So in the same chronology of the Torah. So Kadesh Li, Vayaki V'Yachah, those are the two parshios in Shmos in the order of appearance, meaning the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel, the middle of Perek Yud Gimel. That goes on the right, meaning again, we're now talking about my right, as Todd is wearing the tefillin, and Shema V'Hayam Shemo Mismo. And the Shema V'Hayam Shemo, that is now on the second side, on the left side, as I'm reading it. Now, Rashi over here writes that, and I'm going to paraphrase Rashi. Rashi over here writes that the order of the tefillin is, or are, Kadesh Li V'Hayaki V'Yacha, Shema V'Hayam Shemo, as we just have reported in the Gemara. And so therefore, that is the order of the parashios according to Rashi. Okay. V'hatanya ipcha. Now I'll get to Rabbeinu Tam in just a moment, but let's first get through the Gemara. Now we have a brisa that says just the opposite, meaning the opposite order that we just reported. Am Rabbi Lokasha kam yamina shokori kam yamina shominiach. So the Gemara says, well, it depends what perspective you're coming from, meaning exactly what I just pointed out. The one brisa that says that gives in the order that was presented just now in the Gemara, that's from my perspective as I'm looking at the tefillin wearer. The tefillin wearer himself, obviously, he's looking at the tefillin from the exact opposite perspective. And so for him, it's going to be in the exact reverse. V'hakori kori kesidron. But if you were to read it, you read it in the right order. And this is the line for Rashi that really speaks to Rashi's idea, that the proper order is basically as it's written in the Torah, meaning following the chronology of the Torah, same order as the Torah. Okay, so Adkan, that really takes us to the end of the sugya of the Gemara. I know it's a very short sugya. Actually, let's just see a little more Gemara, and then I'm going to come back to Rabbeinu Tam. Am Rav Chananu, Am Rav Hichli Parshiyoseh Psulos. So Rav Chananu quotes in the name of Rav that if I flip around the Parshiyoseh, that's going to disqualify. Am Rabbi Lo Amarin Ela Gviyasa Lebriyasa Briyasa Legviyasa. So I know it's a strange analogy, but I'm telling you, it's just an easy way to explain the Gemara, and I mean no disrespect, but it's just so easy way. It's such an easy way to present it this way, like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, okay, with the two breads on the outside and the peanut butter and jelly in the middle. So the Gemara now is suggesting that if I take either the peanut butter or the jelly and I flip it around where the bread should be, so that's an affront. So in other words, of the four parshas, 1, 2, 3, and 4, if I took parsha number 2 and put it in the one slot, so that for sure is no good. Why? Because 2 was sandwiched between bread and whatever the other spread is. So and now you're putting on the outside. And the 1, meaning in my analogy the bread, is now going on the inside. So there the Gemara says I can understand that that's an affront. However, if let's say you don't put the peanut butter and jelly in the right order, is that so bad? So in other words, if I flip 2 and 3 around, is that so bad? Or if I flip 1 and 4 around, is that so bad? One had an aisle seat, four had a window seat. I know I'm throwing out a lot of analogies today, but anyway. So Amalei Rava Maishna Gviyasa Lebriyasa Briyasa Gviyasa Delo Da'achdu by Lemechze Avir Lo Kachazia V'Hadlo Ka by Lemechze Avir Kachazia. Bryce Briyasa Lebriyasa Gviyasa Gviyasa Nami Achdu by Lemechze Avir Diyamin Kachazia Avir Dismo V'Dismo Kachazia Avir Diyamin. And the Gemara basically says it's an affront in any direction. Meaning if I take 1 and flip it with 4, that's an affront as well. Because consider, 1 had airspace on the right side. Again, I'm going from my perspective, the one looking at the tefillin wearer. So 1 had airspace on the right side. 4 had airspace on the left side. And so now if I'm flipping 1 and 4, so 1 now lost its right view and gained a left view. And 4 has now lost its left view and gained a right view. It's just as bad all across the board. So the Gemara concludes, therefore, that Seder is li'ikuva. The order of the tefillin is an essential component of the tefillin. Okay, now, here's where it gets interesting. So now what we just learned in the Gemara together is that there's an order, there's a particular order to the tefillin, and not only that, but the essentiality of that order. The order must be in that given order. So, according to Rashi, Rashi now presents the order as the two parshios in Bo, and then Ve'ezchanan, and then Ekev, as we have it in the Torah, same order as the Torah. Those are the four parshios in the bias, going from right to left again, from the perspective of the person observing the tefillin wearer. Now, Rabbeinu Tam says no. Now we can go back to the Gemara, and we can see the Gemara once again from Rabbeinu Tam. Now, there is much to discuss over here, and I'm not going to go through the Tosos this morning, and I apologize, but just to tell you Rabbeinu Tam's order. If you go back to the original Gemara, so Rabbeinu Tam now learns the Gemara like this. Kadesh v'haya is to the right, just like Rashi said. Good. And then Shema v'haya im Shemoa mismol, Shema v'haya im Shemoa is from the left. So that means to say that Shema is in the fourth slot, and v'haya im Shemoa is in the third slot. Meaning one of Rabbeinu Tam's very strong points against Rashi is why didn't the Gemara just simply list off the parshios 1, 2, 3, and 4? The Braisa says 1 and 2 is to the right, and 3 and 4 is to the left. What is that? So one of Rabbeinu Tam's points is, oh, because when we say to the left, we mean starting from the left. So that Shema is now in the 4 slot, and Vayam Im Shemoa is in the 3 slot. Okay. And that is how Rabbeinu Tam orders his tefillin. Now, obviously, you can't satisfy both opinions with one pair of tefillin, because either you're following the order like Rashi or you're following the order like Rabbeinu Tam, and we just learned in the Gemara that order is essential. So that means to say that if you'd like to follow both the opinion of Rashi and the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, you're going to need to now wear two separate pairs of tefillin. The Rush is the first one to write this. Right, I believe he's the first one to write this. So Yeri Shemaim, someone who's God-fearing, so he's going to have two pairs of tefillin. He'll have his Rashi tefillin, he'll have his Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. And the Shulchan Aruch writes that really fundamentally the halacha falls like Rashi, but the Shulchan Aruch also writes that if a person's Yeri Shemaim, if he's a God-fearing individual, so he'll wear two pairs of tefillin. Interesting that both the Rush and the Shulchan Aruch both say, again, it comes really from the Rush. The Rush writes that you can wear the two pairs of tefillin at the same time. Okay. So you wear the two pairs of tefillin at the same time. Now keep in mind, the Gemara tells us elsewhere that there is enough room on your head for two pairs of tefillin. Now, our tefillin nowadays, and this is a historical point, our tefillin nowadays are much bigger than the tefillin they wore back in the good old days. Right? In the good old days, our construction is different. We make them gassos. We make them much thicker. They made them dakos back in the day. But anyway, let's just go back. Let me just report the Rishonim. So the Rush writes that the Yeri Shemayim should wear both. You wear them at the same time. And there is much discussion about the wearing of Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. But the fundamental position is like Rashi. That's the fundamentally accepted position. And then much discuss regarding the wearing of Rabbeinu Tam and whether it should. The Gra famously was asked by his Talmud, Rav Chaim Voloshin, how come you don't wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin? The Gra didn't. So the Gra's answer, as presented in a number of sources, basically said it's not the only debate that's around tefillin and how to make tefillin. In other words, there are many other debates. If the whole purpose over here is to satisfy the multiple of positions that there are wearing tefillin, so you're not limiting yourself to wearing two pairs of tefillin. You'd have to wear, now I have different reports in terms of the number that he actually said, but I heard up to 64. But anyway, the point is that if your goal is to satisfy everyone's opinion, you're wearing a lot more than two pair. So the Gra only wore one pair of tefillin. That's the
Rashi.
That Rashi, meaning that's the fundamentally accepted viewpoint. So the Rush is bothered by your question about Tosif. So he writes that when you put on the tefillin, your kavana should be that you are not wearing both for the mitzvah. You're wearing one for the mitzvah. You're not sure which one. Your kavana is on whichever one is correct. That's why the Rush says that you put them on both at the same time in order to avoid the problem of bracha levatola. Okay. I cannot believe I just answered three successive questions in a row. I'm amazed. I'm simply amazed. Okay, you didn't miss it. It's all here. Okay, Amrav Chananel Amrav. We're continuing the Gemara Lamed Hey Amad Aleph. We are 10 lines from the top. Amrav Chananel Amrav Titur Ditzvon Halacha Moshe Misinai five times in the course of today's daf. I counted. I listed them. Five times in the course of today's daf, we're going to be learning various halachos of Moshe Mitzrayim. The Torah is not very descriptive as it describes tefillin. The Torah gives us a word, totafos. The Torah uses also an os, the word os. It's a sign. But that's it, meaning Torah Shebichsav does not fill in any of the details of tefillin. But we have that's of course why we have Torah Shabbat Peh. And so in the Torah Shabbat Peh, it reports to us what are part and parcel, the halachla Moshe Mitzrayim, complimenting and describing for us what the tefillin are. And so the Gemara tells us that the titura is halachla Moshe Mitzrayim. Now the titura, Rashi over here gives a very simple description of the titura. I'm not going to read the Rashi right now, but I encourage you, please read it on your own in terms of the way he describes the titura. The titura is the base of the tefillin, meaning you have the batim going and resting on a base. So you take a look at Rashi's description. And afterwards, take a look at Tosfos, who gives a somewhat more larger base in which the tefillin are resting. Our tefillin are resting on a much larger base, meaning if you look at anyone's tefillin, so you see that the batim are housed, are sitting on an area that obviously is much larger than the actual batim of the tefillin themselves. Amar Abaye Ma'avarta, the tefillin halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. The Ma'avarta is also halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. And when you get to the back of the tefillin, so there is a extra piece of leather in which the straps are going to go through in order to connect to the tefillin. So that also is halachla Moshe Mitzrayim. The shin that is engraved on the tefillin is also part and parcel of the halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Now we say the shin of the tefillin is halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, so we're talking about the tefillin shel Rosh, not the tefillin shel Yad. Now again, we all know this because we all see this. You could see Tosfos who discusses this idea that it's limited only to the tefillin shel Rosh. The very interesting how when the shin is written on the tefillin, there are two types of shin that are written on the tefillin, a three-legged shin and a four-legged shin. Now, elsewhere, we don't see this four-legged shin, right? The only time that it comes up in appearance is on the tefillin itself. The minag is, you can see in Tosfos over here, Tosfos Divrei Maskil, shin shel tefillin, I know there are two of them, second one. The second Tosfos is the shin shel tefillin, halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, katsu b'shimusha rabbah. So an old sefer, and I say old, Tosfos is quoting it, so therefore it's old. An old sefer describing tefillin, the Shimusha Rabbah, that the tefillin has a surah de shin diyamina gimel reisha, u de smala dalad reisha. So as per our minag, so on the right side is going to be the three-legged shin, and on the left side, the four-legged shin. The apach leislan ba, but he points out, however, that's a minag, which means that obviously you should follow the minag, but if you flip it around, so that's not so bad. Okay, And obviously many more. All this obviously is rich with meaning and symbolism in terms of what exactly the shin is trying to represent. We're gonna continue the Gemara. So shin shel tefillin halacha Moshe Mitzrayim v'tzarich she'yagiyah chritz l'makom ha'tfar. Now, as far as the groove of the tefillin is concerned, remember now we're describing the shel rosh. So the shel rosh is a composite of four batim that are pressed together, pushed together. But there has to be a groove. You have to see the groove of the shel rosh. You look at anyone's shel rosh, you will see the groove. The groove's got to go all the way down to the base. Rav Dimi min Arda amar kevin de minkar lo tzarech. And Rav Dimi min Arda says, as long as there is some indication of the groove, it doesn't have to go all the way down to the base. Amar Rabbi hai klipa de tzolim tzarech lemivdeke dilma is beirei uso be inaksiva tam of aleka. As far as the cloth of the tefillin, you need the examination, inspection before writing it down. The Torah says that you have to write it, ksiva tama, it has to be a perfect writing, and you don't want your parchment to be bad. You don't want it to have cracks in it. And Rav Dimi min Arda amar lo tzarech kumusu badikle. So Rav Dimi min Arda says, look, you don't have to check the cloth, because you know what, you're writing it with a kumus. The kumus is the quill, and it's really sharp, and if there's any crack in the tefillin, it will be exposed by the kumus. I mean, again, just from a pragmatic standpoint, from a common sense standpoint, you want to check the cloth beforehand so that you won't have to, you know, so the kumus won't, you know, inspect and come out with a poor cloth and then require a new cloth, but okay. As far as the ritzuas are concerned, the straps of the tefillin, so they must be black, and that's halachla Moshe Mitzrayim. That too is halachla Moshe Mitzrayim. And that represents our fourth of the halachla Moshe Mitzrayim that we said this morning. Okay, so the straps have to be black. Now the tefillin itself, the houses of the tefillin, there is no requirement for it to be black. However, minig is to paint them black as well for a uniform look. Meisvei, the Gemara is challenging based on the following brayso. Tefillin ain't kosher no so elabim minan. As far as tying the tefillin together is concerned, you have to use product of the animal, right? Sinews of the animal in order to stitch it up. Ben yirakos, ben shchors, ben levanos, ben levanos. Far as the color is concerned for the straps, the colors can be yellow, black, and white. Adumoslo, don't paint them red. And mipnei ganai v'davar acher. So the Gemara says that if you have red straps on your tefillin, so it will be indelicate and indelicate. The second indelicate, much more than the first indelicate. The first indelicacy is that it could be that you have scabs in your body and you're picking at your scabs and you're bleeding. And so with a red strap, people might say, oh, you know what? The person's got, you know, a lot of discharge, a lot of blood discharge coming out of his body, and that's indelicate. The second indelicacy, so the Gemara just simply alludes to it with a davar achir. Rashi over here says that what my people suspect if they see blood on his tefillin is that he was with his wife when she was an Ida. So, even more indelicate. So, keep red off the tefillin. I'm Rav Yehuda Maisa B'Talmidus Rabbi Akiva Shaya Kosher Tefillah B'Lashon HaShol Tcheles. Now, the Gemara says that he saw that one of the students of Rabbi Akiva was walking around with a tefillin that had Ritzua HaShol Tcheles. Sorry, the straps of a blue wool. V'lo Amar Lo Davar. And it didn't reprimand a student at all. Asher also tzaddik ratamid of lo michabo. Now he's a tzaddik and he has a student, and if a student's not doing right, of course he's going to reprimand a student. So amar lo hein lo rao sovim rao so lo haya menicho. No. He didn't see him, and if he would have seen him, he would have said something. Ma'isa b'horkanos b'noshel Rabbi Elazar ben Horkanos shayakoshet tefillin b'lashon shel argaman. Over here, once again, talking about tying the tefillin together with some sort of purple stitching, purple wool. And v'lo amar lo davar, and he didn't say anything. Efsher. Oh, so tzaddik rabbi no v'lo micha bo. He saw his son doing something, and he wouldn't reprimand his son. Amar lo hein lo rao so. V'im rao so lo haya menicha. So the Gemara says, no, he didn't see his son. If he saw his son, he would have, of course, said something. Okay, anyway. Adkan divrei abraisa, what did we just all see together in the braisa? With clarity, we saw in the braisa that the straps could be made up of yellow or white or black. And it doesn't have to be just black, like what was reported earlier. Ketani, wait one second. You're ahead. Okay. Ketani mia ben yirakos ben shchors ben levanos. Lo kasha kame bifnim kame b'chutz. So the Gemara says we're talking about, it depends which side of the straps we're talking about. The outside of the straps need to be black. That's halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. When I say the outside, the part that's facing other people. The inside, the part of the straps that's facing you, does not have to be black. And there it could be an assortment of colors. Again, red should be avoided because of an indiscretion. Or people will consider an indiscretion if they see red. So even bifnim, my ganai v'davar acher ika. So the Gemara says, well, wait one second. That part's not exposed. And so if it's red, so what? No one's going to see it. So the Gemara says, zimnin de mishapchen lay. The Gemara says, yeah, generally speaking, no one sees the skin side of the straps. But, you know, the words, life happens, and sometimes your straps move out of place, and sometimes the inside of it gets exposed, and people see it, and if they see red, so that would be possible thoughts of indiscretion. Okay, anyway, so what comes out now is that there is an outer part of the strap and the inner part of the strap. Outer part of the strap has to be black, halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. Inner part does not have to be black. What's been really popular of late is that straps are being sold where both sides are painted black. So I just got my straps replaced. So very fine sofer from Eretz Yisrael, and so he told me the ones that are black on both sides, and he told me that he said he's very comfortable with it, but not everyone's on board with it. Clearly the minhag is, I mean it's clear as day. Clearly the minhag back in the day was the outside should be black and the inside does not have to be black, and that's the way it was for years. And now. For both sides to be painted black, so it's not everybody today is on board with the idea that both sides should be black. But okay, anyway, whatever. Without divulging, I find him to be an extraordinarily reliable sofer, and so I bought him. Tana Tefillin Meruvahs Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim, and here's our fifth Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim of the day, and that is that it has to be square. It has to be perfectly square, meaning both every side being equal, but not only every side being equal, but 90-degree angle. 90-degree angle, that the Gemara says that by using the word, the amarapapa bitafran uvela achsonan, meaning the stitching and the diagonal. Meaning we know that if something is a perfect square, so not only are all four sides going to be equal, but also the hypotenuse that's running across. Mm-hmm. The hypotenuse running across has to be working at the correct ratio. Okay, so mathematically it is on a perfect square where the triangle down that you're creating by running a diagonal line through. So that's going to be a triangle of 90 degrees and 245 degree angles. The relationship between side and hypotenuse is going to be x times the square root of 2. Okay, so base. Yeah, that's, thank you very much. It's literally, it's like, you know, it's basics. You'll forgive me. It's the basics of geometry. So the so the Gemara says so it has to be a perfect square. So lema misayele aosu tfilaso agula sakana ve'imba mitzvah. So the Gemara now quotes the Braisa. The Braisa says very clearly that tefillin have to be that tefillin cannot be round, and if they're round, they pose a risk, an actual health risk, which I'm going to explain in just a moment even better. But it comes down now that this Braisa is a good support, right? The Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Amra papa masisin davide ki amguza. No, the Braisa, we can make the argument, meaning it's not a good argument, but we can make the argument that really round is okay. When the Braisa says that round is disqualified, the Braisa was talking about like an egg-shaped round. In other words, so if you're wearing tefillin that is not perfectly round, but pointy round, so you wear it on your head, so now all you need to do is just simply bump your head into something, and God forbid, the tefillin will depress against your skull. So in other words, that's what the Braisa could be talking about, but maybe perfectly round is okay. Now, obviously, that's not the right conclusion. The right conclusion is it has to be square, like we described earlier. It's just that the Gemara, if the Gemara wants to bring a Braisa as a proof, it has to be an absolute proof, and we could explain the Braisa otherwise. Am Rav Huna tefillin kol zman shepnei tavla kayemes ksheros. As long as the batim are intact, it's going to be good. Rav Chista amar nifsiku shtaim ksheros shosh psus. So Rav Chista says, look, truth of the matter is it's hard to see this as all the batim are pressed together. Nice. But, admittedly. But if, let's say, you open up a pair of tefillin and you could look at it from the inside, you know, you have good lighting, you could see from the inside. So if there is a hole in two of the batim, that's acceptable. Three already now becomes puzzle. Amar Rav Ahad Amar Shlaim Ksheros Lo Amar El Ezeh Shlo Keneged Zeh Aval Zeh Keneged Zeh Psulos. Even when we say that two is acceptable, that's only if the hole does not go all the way through. So if you will, let's now look at batim two and three, the two center batim. So if I have a hole in two and if I have a hole in three, as long as they don't see one another, it's basically the windows are not facing one another, that's okay. But once the windows face one another, and now we have a view from two to three and from three to two, so that will disqualify the tefillin. Now this is only going to be a problem if it's new, but if it's old, there's no problem with it. Why? Why should there be a difference between new versus old? So Rashi over here writes as follows. Lo amarin beis batim asmuchos de psulim becharata v'nifstiku v'adai or mekulkalhu. Very, really interesting Rashi. Basically, it is, here comes another one of my analogies for today, basically the lemon laws of tefillin. Okay, you buy a new car, right? And you buy a new car, you take it off, and it turns out to be just, it's not working. So we have in this state a lemon law telling us that you go back and, you know, it deals off. Meaning, if it's new, you're expecting it to work. So if you have brand new pair of tefillin, and now there's a hole in the bottom, going from two to three, so in other words, you see already that the hide was defective from the very beginning. And then it's no good. In other words, you can't view it as good tefillin because that is a clear indication that the hide was defective from the very beginning. However, if it's an old pair of tefillin, we understand there's something called usage. And so what's going to end up happening is that over the course of time, so the tefillin are going to get worn and there are going to be holes in the tefillin. So there, because that's considered normal usage, so there is more of an allowance for there to be holes within the tefillin. Amar le abayla Rav Yosef, heche dam yichata veheche dam yatikasa. So good. So we're talking about a halachic difference between new tefillin and old tefillin. What kind of litmus test are there for new tefillin and old tefillin? So the Gemara gives us a couple. Amar le kolhecha ki masli be b'shacha, v'hadr chalim atikasa v'idachata. So the Gemara talks about the rigidity and the brittle nature versus flexibility. If it's something where you stretch it out and it comes back, so that is considered old. You stretch it out and it has no flexibility, so that's considered new. Okay. That's one litmus test. Inami, top of Lamed Hei Amud Beis. The Gemara provides another litmus test. Kol Eicha Dechi Masli Bei Bemasna Asya Abasrei Charata V'idach Atikasa. So if you're pulling on the straps and the tefillin are also going to be pulled in conjunction with that, that's an indication of newness. Otherwise, it's old. I'm not perfectly clear about this particular litmus test. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi actually gives two pshatim over here exactly how this litmus test works. I'm going to be honest with everyone. I'm not perfectly clear exactly how this litmus test works to identify whether it's old or whether it's new. Abai have a yasa coming to Rav Yosef. Ifsik le ritzua did tefillin. Okay. One of the tefillin straps have snapped into two. And what do you do now? So that's what happened to me, and I got a new pair of straps. But anyway, so Amar le Mao le Mikdere. So the Gemara now entertains the idea, well, can we just knot it up? So Amar le Ukshartem Ksiv should take Kshiratama. So the Gemara says, no, you can't knot it up. The Torah says Kshiratama. How do we get from Kshiratama to the idea that it can't be knotted up? So Rashi writes as follows. Now Rashi over here offers two pshatim as well. Rashi writes, should take Kshira Na'eh. V'im yesh kesher acher b'rtzua lavad mikesher shekoshim b'rosh. Sulo havikshira yafe. So one pshat Rashi offers is like this. In every tefillin shel rosh, we're going to have one knot, of course. Meaning there are two straps coming out of the tefillin shel rosh that are going to be knotted by the back of the neck and then coming down in the front of the person. So when we are talking about and putting in another knot, so that's not kshira na'a, that's not beautiful anymore. In other words, the simplicity of the tefillin is one knot and that's it. That's one pshat. Rashi offers the second pshat, inami. Sorry, lashon acher, kshiratama ritzua shlema velo kshura. So in other words, the kshiratama, in other words, it has to be a perfect kshira in that one knot, the rest of it has to be totally smooth. Okay, in other words, basically we're arriving at the same conclusion, but from the word itself. Amle revacha breid rav yosel revashi ma lemitvei v'aile litzfira legavai, legav. So now, how about this? If your tefillin has snapped in half, so tying it or not, we ruled out. But how about a good stitch work? And let's even say that you went to a plastic surgeon, right? And it's like real beautiful stitching. And so it's tefira legavai. The stitching is done from the back, so you can't even see the stitching from the front. Is that okay? So the Gemara gives a cryptic answer. Poke chazi mai amad debar. We'll go outside and see what people are doing. And basically, if the minig is you're allowed to stitch, if that's what the minig is, so then we could stitch. Otherwise, we can't. Now, the Gemara doesn't tell us what the minig is. So the Rishonim debate what the minig actually was. If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi writes, my amad debar, the kamen de einu aginken lo sase. So Rashi says that the Gemara meant this as a chumra. People do not stitch up their tefillin, and therefore, Rashi says it should not be done. Tosos, exact opposite conclusion. And who is Tosos quoting? Of course, Rabbi Natan. Right. I make this statement not having the stats to back me up. Seems to be a lot of machlokes Rashi Rabbi Natan disproportionate to the rest of Shas regarding the issues of tefillin. So anyway, so Rashi says perish bekuntros lahakmir v'Rabbi Natan mifarish lahakel. So Rabbi Natan goes the exact opposite direction. Ki ahi de perikam de erev and gabi hilma v'lachim. I'm sorry. Let's just leave it at. So Rabbi Natan says no, just the opposite, that you can do a stitch job. And as far as Allah is concerned, so you'll forgive me, I didn't look it up, whether or not if your tefillin straps break in half, whether or not you could stitch it, but Rashi Rabbein Atam, I can get you started on the halacha, and that is, it's a machlokas rishonim, whether or not you could stitch up the straps. Amar Rav Papa Gardume Ritzuas Ksheros. Now, again, we talk about usage. So, let's say you do have straps coming down from the tefillin, you have the knot in the back, and you have straps, but again, usage. Right, a good pair of tzitzis. We're going to talk about this later in the Masechta, in a short time from now. So you wear your tzitzis and you wear them often enough, and so they're going to get worn out. And what used to be nice long strings now are, you know, kind of like what you have are stubs of strings, right? Basically left a remnants of a string. So we're not talking about tzitzis right now, we're talking about tefillin, but it's the same idea. In other words, the straps are flowing down, and eventually after usage, so, you know, they're... Right, a good part of it's going to be gone. So you have basically a remnant of the straps. That's the gardumim. So gardumim ritzus ksheros. So what the Gemara of Church first tries to do is make an argument that it's okay. It works. Meaning, and again, it's acceptable usage. You're wearing the tefillin. They start off as nice long straps, but over the course of time, so they're going to fray, and eventually you'll have just a remnant of a strap. The Gemara says v'lav milsihi. But the Gemara eventually rejects that, and the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Mid Amri b'nei Rebbi Chia, gardumi tchelis v'gardumi ezov ksherim. So when is it that gardumim are okay? So the Gemara gives two examples where they're going to be okay. By tzitzis, like we just pointed out. So in other words, as long as you started with kosher tzitzis, and you have now just remnants of it, so that's okay. And later we're going to talk more detail exactly what does that mean. How much remnants do you need in order for the tzitzis to still be okay? And also by the azov, something that we're not familiar with, but you take the azov, you dip it in the mayim chaim, and you sprinkle it on the person who's tamei meis, and now he becomes tahor. So let's say I don't have the full hyssop, the full azov. I have, you know, there's just a little bit left over, you know, over the course of time and usage, so I just have stub. I have stubs of it, stumps of the azov, but I don't have the full azov. That's fine. Now, ha-samud de-tashmishe mitzvah ninu. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why it's fine over there. It's fine over there because the usage over there is the usage of mitzvah. Meaning, inherently, are tzitzis holy items? No. It's tashmishe mitzvah. And the same thing with the ezov. Inherently, are they holy items? No. And so there, gardumim are acceptable. But when we're talking about the tefillin, and now keep in mind, by the way, we're not even talking about the batim, we're talking about the straps. But still, the Gemara says that is considered Kedusha, and since that's considered Kedusha, so you either need a full strap or it's no good. Garduming are no good. So Mechlal de is Lahushi Shiura. So the Gemara says, okay, so you know basically what we just said over here. What we just learned together is that the straps of tefillin have a particular shear. What is the shear of the straps of tefillin? The Kamish Yirai Amarami Brachama Mereshlakish ad Etzba Tsreda. So it goes down to the finger. Now, etzba tzreda is a term that you've heard before, right? We talk about it in terms of the enuma, in terms of counting the fingers when doing the lottery. Rav Kahana machve kafuf, Rav Achon machve pashut. Now, is it the finger when the arm is bent, or is it the finger when the arm is straight? And the Gemara has two opinions on this matter. Now, a really important question over here is that we're talking about the shear of the straps of tefillin. Now, the confusion over here, admittedly, is, are we talking about the tefillin shel yad, or are we talking about the tefillin shel rosh? And so let's make an argument in either direction. It's not clear from the Gemara. In other words, it could be that we're talking about the tefillin shel rosh. And how are we using now the finger as the base point of what is the proper shear? Because if you're standing up and you're wearing the tefillin and the tefillin and the straps are coming down, so basically as your arm is straight down, the tefillin has to go down there. That's one way to learn the Gemara. And then the Gemara could be debating whether the arm should be straight down or the arm could be bent. And the tefillin is hitting the bent portion of the arm. But more probably what the Gemara is here describing is not the straps of the shel rosh, but rather the straps of the shel yad. Meaning, how long should the straps of the shel yad be? Well, we haven't learned yet, but we're going to learn it soon enough. And again, we all know this anyway, that the shel yad is placed on the upper arm, on the bicep. Okay, and so what you're going to do is you're going to wrap up your tefillin, and how far down should it be able to go? And it could be that that's what the Gemara is talking about. And actually, right, it makes a little more, it sounds more reasonable. So that we're talking about the straps of the shel yad, and it needs to go to all the way to the end of the finger. And then the halacha talks about, right, and then the ability to wrap it back and to create a shin on your hand. But in other words, that could be talking about. And then you could certainly hear the difference between the arm being straight versus the arm being bent. Okay, good. Anyway, as far as the straps of the shel rosh, so the halacha is brought down. It's brought down the Shulchan Aruch. I'm going on memory right now, so please forgive me. I didn't look it up last night. So the tefillin shel rosh, the straps. So the right strap is, the halacha is, it should go down minimally to the makom amila, and the left strap should go down to the tibur, should go down to the belly button. Marbury de Ravana Avid Kididan. I skipped a little bit. Sorry. Rabba Kataluhu Upashit Vishadila Viluhu. The Gemara reports that when he would make his tefillin, Rabba, so he would knot it up and he would let some of it flow out. Rashi writes, Rabba Kishiminich tefillin Kashale Beresha Vishari Aritsuas Pashit Vishadilu Vitolin Al Kitefo Me Acharav. And so he would have the straps going over his shoulders. Umatlis luhu. I'm sorry. That was Rabba's minuk. Rav Acha bar Yaakov katalu umatlis luhu. And the and Rashi explains that this particular minhag is that as far as the roots were concerned, so they would hang down, and they would hang down in front. And Marbury de Ravana avikiti dan. And Marbury de Ravana would do it like what we do. And what we do is that we have the straps running in front of our body, not hanging out in the back. I'm Rav Yehuda Berei Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas Mishmei Rav Kesher Shel Tefillin Halacha LaMoshe MiSinai. The knot of the tefillin, that is Halacha LaMoshe MiSinai. I'm Rav Nachman U Nevehem Labar. And as far as the name is concerned, the name should be exterior. Rav Ashi Aviyasev Kami Damar Zutra Ishavche Le Ritzua De Tefillin. What happened was is that the strap becomes inverted. I'm Rav Lo Savla Mar Nevehem Labar. Wait 1 second. The black should be facing out, not in. Amrlei lava daite, and his answer was very simple. I didn't realize. In other words, yeah. Thank you for thank you for correcting. Okay, let's do one more piece of Gemara for today. Uru kol ame arz kishem Hashem nikra alecha viru mimeka. Okay, back in Parshas Kisavo. So we read that all the nations of the world are going to see that the name of Hashem is on you, and they're going to fear you. Tanya Reb Elazar Gadol Omer elu tefil shabarosh. This is specifically in reference to the tefil shabarosh. Vasi rosis kapi v'risis acharai. The Gemara over here goes back to Parshas Kisisa, and there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe wanted to see, meaning understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu better, and the only thing that Moshe was able to see was a back view. Amar Rav Chana Bar Bizna Amar Rav Shimon Chasidim Alam Yishar Allah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Kesher Shel Tefillin. So what Moshe was able to see was not the front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kav V'Yachol, meaning to the best of our ability to understand this. He didn't see the front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he only saw the Kesher Shel Tefillin, the knot in the tefillin, on the back of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. No, it doesn't matter. That's a totally different issue. Right, which one he wore. Okay, Adkan. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll continue.